This is Carolyn reading the News Gazette for Thursday, February 6th, 2025. Beginning on the front page, the headline reads, Champagne Weighing Future as Federal Priorities Shift, by Jana Wershma. No interfering with immigration enforcement, no imposing vaccine or mask mandates, no far-left agendas getting in the way of practical solutions. These are among the U.S. Department of Transportation's new priorities when deciding which municipalities receive federal grants for projects, according to an order signed last week by Secretary Sean Duffy. Champaign Mayor Deb Finan said city administrators are trying to have a measured approach as they continue to react to the wave of federal announcements in Donald Trump's first 3 weeks back in the White House. It's been a tumultuous time with respect to trying to understand what the criteria is going to be from the federal government for so many local entities accessing funds, Finan said. And so my reaction to the order is mixed, because I, in some ways, don't know how seriously we need to take it. Specifically, the order states that federally supported programs and activities, including all grants, loans, and contracts, shall prioritize projects that require local compliance or cooperation with federal immigration enforcement and with other goals and objectives specified by the President of the United States or the Secretary. Prohibit recipients of Department of Transportation support or assistance from imposing vaccine and mask mandates. Mitigate the impacts of the Department of Transportation activities on families and family-specific difficulties, and give preference to communities with marriage and birth rates above the national average. Direct funding to local opportunity zones where permitted. Utilize user pay models. Duffy said this order and other recent steps are intended to restore common sense governance and merit-based policies. Quote, under President Trump's leadership, we are focused on eliminating excessive regulations that have hindered economic growth, increased costs for American families, and prioritized far-left agendas over practical solutions, he said. The American people deserve an efficient, safe, and pro-growth transportation system based on sound decision-making, not political ideologies. These actions will help us deliver on that promise. End quote. Finan said that recent federal announcements have caused some frustration because we have projects in the works and we're changing the rules in the middle of the game. She said one major project slated to receive federal funding involves improvements to a stretch of South Mattis Avenue from Windsor Road to Curtis Road. She estimated that the price tag is about $8 million to $10 million, and federal funds are expected to cover approximately 80%. Other local projects set to receive federal funding include the Village of Savoy's Curtis Road Underpass and Urbana's Florida Avenue Corridor Project. The order from the federal agency raises questions not just at the local level, but statewide due to the Illinois Trust Act. According to the Illinois Attorney General's Office, this law generally restricts local law enforcement agencies from participating in immigration enforcement. The Champaign, Urbana, and University of Illinois Police Departments have all said they will adhere to this act. The order from the federal agency further states that grant-making activities will be based on, quote, sound economic principles and analysis supported by rigorous cost-benefit requirements and data-driven decisions, end quote. Additionally, statutes regarding transportation policies, programs, and activities must avoid creating ill effects for families and communities and instead maximize benefits for them. Furthermore, federally supported programs and activities, including grants, shall not be used to further political objectives or for projects and goals that are purely local in nature and unrelated to a proper federal interest. The Transportation Secretary's order comes amid continued questions about whether local communities can depend on federal funding after the Office of Management and Budget issued a memo January 27th announcing a freeze on federal loans and grants. Administration officials said the pause would allow them to review whether various expenditures aligned with Trump's executive orders to roll back initiatives on matters such as diversity, equity, and inclusion. The memo was rescinded 2 days later amid legal challenges, but a White House spokeswoman emphasized it will be rigorously implemented. Finance said the city's finance team and Public Works Department started gathering information about which city projects are tied to federal funds when the freeze was initially announced, and also expect to receive a similar analysis from the federal government. "It's pretty fluid right now," she said, "and so we're trying to be prepared and gather the information as quickly as we can so that we've got a good list and we're able to react as the various memos are, this is probably not the last one." In addition to the order on Transportation Department grants, Duffy also signed a memo directing the agency to find and end Biden-era directives and programs that, quote, that promote climate change activism, diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, racial equity, gender identity policies, environmental justice, and other partisan objectives, officials said. Finan expressed concern over how federal orders might impact the city's Diversity Advancement Program, which encourages city departments, as well as contractors and vendors doing business with the city, to increase the amount of goods and services provided by local businesses owned by minorities, women, and other socially and economically disadvantaged groups. Finan is unsure if any of the city projects that use vendors that are part of that program are also tied to federal funding. "That is a program that the city of Champaign is very proud of and has worked very hard to develop over many years," she said. "We are a model throughout the state, and we've been able to build capacity for minority contractors and vendors. I think we can talk about the dollars for the road projects, and obviously that's a big deal for our community. But the other piece is a big deal for our community as well." Still on the front page from the Danville government, the headline reads, "Lounges for Cannabis Consumption on Agenda," by Jana Wiersema. Danville. The city of Danville is considering amending its zoning ordinance to allow lounges where customers can consume cannabis on site. Community Development Administrator Logan Kronk said he put this item on today's Danville Area Planning and Zoning Commission agenda at the recommendation of local aldermen. "There is a current business owner that was also seeking a revision to current zoning text, which does not allow for the consumption lounges," Kronk said, later confirming that he was referring to Seven Point, a combination dispensary and record store. The Planning and Zoning Commission will forward a recommendation on the change to the City Council, which will then make a final decision on whether to approve the proposal. "If the Commission does not recommend the change, the Council will need a supermajority to approve it," Kronk said. The proposed changes include striking an existing provision stating that dispensaries may not host on-site consumption of cannabis. Additionally, planning staff have drafted a new chapter of the city code to regulate cannabis lounges, Kronk said. Under the proposal, dispensaries would be required to obtain a cannabis consumption facility license before opening a lounge and allowing on-site consumption. "All cannabis or cannabis-infused products consumed on the premises of a cannabis consumption facility must be purchased at the associated dispensary," the proposed city code states. "No outside cannabis or cannabis-infused products, i.e., bring your own cannabis or cannabis-infused products, shall be allowed in or on the premises of a cannabis consumption facility. The annual license fee would be set at $1,500, and licenses would be revocable at any time with or without cause by the mayor." Danville aldermen voted in September to limit the city's number of dispensary licenses to 3. The city is currently home to Seven Point and Sunnyside, and there are plans to build a new era dispensary in town as well. Seven Point CEO Brad Zerman, who has been lobbying the city to allow lounges, said that people need a safe place to smoke. "People are buying cannabis all over the place, but it's a whole nother story when you want to try to use it," he said. "People smoke in their car, they smoke in their house, in their basement, outside. But there's never really a good place for a few people to smoke because it's going to generate too much smoke, and no one wants that." He added that by making the change, the city could keep more business in town, as residents currently go to Tilton in order to take advantage of the lounge there. Zerman also hopes to use a lounge to set his business apart from other dispensaries, provide more bar-style programming, such as live music, and attract more food trucks by drawing a larger crowd. Seven Point would also like to purchase a food truck to operate in conjunction with their proposed lounge. "The business would not charge an admission fee for the lounge," Zerman said. "The only requirement would be to buy cannabis from their dispensary to use inside the facility." "We don't want any outside cannabis of any kind," he said. "That's a whole nother thing about safety. We want to provide a safe place. We have to make sure the cannabis is safe." They would also plan to provide whatever devices and equipment people need to use the cannabis. Photo from the front page, story on A6. Headline reads, "Star 57 Diner, Restaurateurs Bringing New Life to Classic Diner Building," by Dave Hinton, Tuscola. For Nita Zakiri and her husband Enrique Didi Zakiri, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree in terms of their chosen occupation. "My husband owned a little cafe shop back home in their native North Macedonia," Nita said. "When he came here, he wanted to continue in the restaurant industry, and my dad always worked at a restaurant." The couple are set to open Star 57 Diner in the former Denny's Classic Diner building at 1104 Tuscola Boulevard. They also own Lakeview Family Restaurant in Shelbyville. Star 57, which gets its name from nearby Interstate 57, will have a retro look like the Denny's before it. Work on the interior was still ongoing this week. "We are looking more into the 50s theme as far as inside," Nita said. "Our decorations have old cars. They will include some Corvettes from 1957, featuring the cars from that era." Opening a new business is always a challenge, but the Zakiris aren't afraid to take a chance. They took a big gamble when they opened Lakeview in 2020, right when COVID was going on. "Everyone was closing. We were opening up," Nita said. "I don't know how we did it. So far, everything is going well." Nita's father manages that restaurant. She said Star 57 could open this month. The restaurant will have a full menu, serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner. "A little of everything," she said. "We will have Italian, a little seafood," she said. "It will be like an American-style diner. We will have specialty items, burgers. The breakfast will be huge, dinners as well." The Zakiris have one son and live in Decatur. From the Our Communities page, still in the News Gazette, Champaign County Courts. Rantoul woman pleads guilty to child endangerment in death of grandchild, by Luke Taylor, Urbana. A Rantoul woman pleaded guilty Wednesday to endangering the life or health of a child after one of her grandchildren was found dead in her bathtub in 2023. As the hearing came to a close, court security officers removed two people from the courtroom who apparently became upset at the sentence, which did not include prison time. Rochelle A. Brown, 54, will serve 30 months probation as part of the negotiated plea, which also included a dismissal of the charge of involuntary manslaughter. Assistant State's Attorney Brooke Hinman said that if the case had gone to trial, the state was prepared to present evidence from police who responded to the scene and a witness. She said Brown called 911 on June 28, 2023, and told officers who responded that she put the child in the bathtub and left the water running as she stepped outside for 5 minutes to smoke marijuana, and when she returned, she found the child lying face down in the tub. Police also said they also spoke to someone who was outside with Brown, who told them Brown was smoking and drinking a significant amount of alcohol with the group and had left the child unsupervised for over 30 minutes. Public defender Elizabeth Pollock, who was representing Brown, said other evidence corroborated Brown's claim of only being gone for 5 minutes. Pollock said the water was still running when police arrived and had not overflowed the tub, indicating it could not possibly have been running for 30 minutes. She said Brown had also left an older grandchild in the bathtub at the same time, and the child who died was still alive when police responded. Along with probation, Brown will be required to obtain an evaluation for drug and alcohol abuse and follow any recommendations for treatment or counseling. She will also be required to refrain from the use or possession of any controlled substances during her probation. She had no prior convictions. Brown was in tears by the end of her hearing and was escorted to the probation office by court security officers to avoid conflict with the people who were removed from the courtroom, who accused Brown of murder. Still on the Our Communities page, headline reads, FedEx, Effingham, Springfield, and Urbana Shipping Centers Closing, by Jana Wiersema. FedEx has confirmed that its shipping station in Urbana will close later this year, along with facilities in Springfield and Effingham. When asked Wednesday if the FedEx Ship Center at 2007 Federal Way was going to close, the company's media department provided the following statement to the News Gazette. FedEx regularly evaluates its network and makes adjustments to align with the evolving needs of the business. We recently informed employees that FedEx facilities in Effingham, Springfield, and Urbana will close later this year, and certain team members will be offered opportunities at other FedEx locations. Decisions of this nature are the result of much thought and consideration for maintaining the high level of service expected from our customers and other needs of our business. The company notified affected employees several months before any changes, the statement said. They will receive assistance with finding other employment opportunities within the company, including additional support options like relocation assistance or severance where applicable. FedEx's website indicates that the ship center at Federal Way is the only one of its kind in CU. The closures do not affect its FedEx office stores in West Champaign and Campustown, nor its distribution facility in North Champaign. Headline, Paxton Police, Two Men Arrested in Armed Robbery at Liquor Store, by Dave Hinton. Paxton. Two men have been arrested in the December 27th armed robbery of a Paxton liquor store. Rayvon D. Sampson, 28, of Champaign, and Brian D. Ormond, 26, of Chicago, were arrested January 12th by Chicago police in that city and have each been charged with armed robbery with a firearm. Paxton Police Chief Coy Cornett said they are suspected in a string of armed robberies in the Chicago area and downstate Illinois. Police said a license plate reader recorded what is believed to have been the men's getaway car after the Paxton armed robbery, but the license plate had been removed. The car, a 2006 gold Chevrolet Malibu, was located January 20th at Fountain Valley Mobile Home Park in Rantoul and seized by Paxton police, Cornett said, adding the men had discarded it because it was hot, having allegedly been used in several armed robberies. In the Paxton robbery, two men wearing masks and carrying guns walked into Paxton Variety Liquors, 403 South Railroad Avenue, at 6:19 p.m., December 27th, and demanded cash from the two clerks on duty. They obtained an undisclosed amount before leaving. Cornett said no one was hurt. The license plate readers had recorded the car they were believed to have used entering Paxton that night and later headed south toward Rantoul on US 45. Online listings indicate Ormond had been readmitted to Stateville Correctional Center in Crest Hill, where he had been paroled. Sampson is listed as an inmate in the Cook County Correctional Center. Headline, Rural Muhammad, Dog Dies in House Fire, Two Cats Rescued, by Dave Hinton. Rural Muhammad, a dog died, but two cats were saved in a fire Wednesday afternoon and a home in rural Muhammad. Corn Belt Fire Protection District Chief John Kohler said the fire broke out in the kitchen of the home in the 400 block of Briarfield Court at Spring Lake, southwest of Muhammad. None of the three residents were home at the time, Kohler said. The dwelling sustained smoke damage throughout, displacing the residents. The cats are being housed at a veterinary clinic. A neighbor spotted the fire and notified firefighters at 2 p.m. When we arrived, smoke was coming from the residence, a bi-level wood frame home, Kohler said. The Champaign County Fire Investigative Team was at the scene to determine the cause of the fire. About 20 firefighters responded to the call. Corn Belt received mutual aid from Bonneville, Seymour, and Sangamon County, Fisher. Firefighters cleared the scene about 4 p.m. Headline, Paxton IGA Food Liner, Kirby Foods, Inc. to buy Longtime Grocery, by Dave Hinton. Paxton. A longtime Paxton grocery store will change owners later this year. Craig and Candy Reeks will sell Paxton IGA Food Liner to Kirby Foods, Incorporated. Open 24 hours, the Paxton store is known in the community for employees helping customers to their vehicles with their groceries. The store also allows area churches and civic groups to hold cookouts and sell the proceeds outside the store on Saturdays. The Reekses and Kirby Foods president Bob Himango were not available to comment on any potential changes Wednesday. In a press release, it was announced the transaction is anticipated to close on March 25th to allow for a smooth transition. The IGA has operated at its current location, 144 West Pell Street, for more than 70 years, opening in 1954. It underwent an expansion several years ago. Among the previous store owners was Craig Reeks' father, Ken. Kirby Foods started as a family-owned business in 1969 when it bought its first store on Kirby Avenue in Champaign. The company now owns 16 stores in central Illinois and western Indiana. The company, which is headquartered in Champaign, became 100% employee-owned in 2009. Headline, Champaign Fire Department, Probe into Small Downtown Fire Ongoing, by Luke Taylor. Champaign. No one was hurt in a small fire Wednesday morning in a downtown Champaign building. Champaign Fire Department spokesman Randy Smith said a passerby reported the fire at 10:48 a.m. Initial reports put it in a building in the 200 block of South Market Street, but firefighters who arrived found light smoke coming from a building in the 300 block. Smith said they deployed a single hose line and quickly put out the fire in the single-story commercial building. The investigation is ongoing, and the cause of the fire has yet to be determined. No firefighter injuries were reported. Headline, Teacher of the Week, Dolores Lloyd, 3rd Grade, Pleasant Acres Elementary, Rantoul, Role Model, by Anthony Zellis. In her 5 years teaching 3rd grade at Rantoul's Pleasant Acres Elementary School, Dolores Lloyd has provided value to both her co-workers and students. Lloyd works really hard to establish positive relationships with her scholars and their families, Principal Samantha Sebestik said. She always creates a fun learning environment and is always looking for ways to provide meaningful, hands-on learning experience for her scholars. Ms. Lloyd is also a wonderful mentor to some teachers in our building. We are so grateful for Ms. Lloyd's dedication to education and Pleasant Acres. I find my work important because I get the privilege of supporting parents in the academic and social-emotional growth of their child. Children come to school with a wealth of experiences and knowledge. As a teacher, I get to partner with parents. Together, we foster knowledge while facilitating connections and experiences that promote academic growth. This academic growth becomes the foundation for which more complex learning occurs. I became a teacher because I did not want others to have the experiences I had in school, longing to be the one and only second grade classroom in the building that was taught by a black woman. In fact, I went through elementary, middle, and high school without ever having been taught by a minority teacher. I was, however, lucky enough to be assigned to a black female guidance counselor in the first year she was employed in my high school during my junior year. Her name was Cheryl Box, and she helped me put me on the path to higher education. My favorite or most unique lesson that I teach is, I cannot narrow it down to one or two. I enjoy lessons surrounding the holidays and studying holiday celebrations around the world. Additionally, my students learn economics as they earn Lloyd Bucks for jobs and student responsibilities in and out of the classroom. This economic system includes saving money to purchase privileges such as no homework for a day, bring a stuffy to school, dance party with a teacher, and a friend, to name a few. The students really enjoy this. Each week they receive their paycheck and are required to add how much they have earned for the week. They also use their funds to pay rent once a month. My most fulfilling moments on the job are when my current students tell me, "This was the best day ever." This is something they say quite often. It is also fulfilling to have my former students come to my classroom each morning. On occasions, my former students will tell me about a project or activity that we did when they were in my class that was memorable to them. I keep students engaged by providing hands-on experiences, including classroom cooking. Generally, our cooking revolves around a project we are working on. With most projects, I build the connection it has to the real world and/or careers. Something else I'm passionate about is reading and advocating for the students and families in the district. I am also passionate about building relationships with families and celebrating students inside and outside of school. My favorite teacher and subject to study in school was, I did not have a favorite teacher when I was in school. It wasn't until my student teaching experience with a third grade teacher at Wiley Elementary School in Urbana, Barb Gillespie Washington, that I identified a favorite teacher. She not only became my favorite teacher, but also helped me realize my love of science and the kind of teacher I wanted to be once I got my own classroom. If I weren't a teacher, I would be a lawyer, because I like to read and engage in debates. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette from Thursday, February 6th, 2025. Please stay tuned.